Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The St. Louis Art Museum will soon unveil an exhibition that will connect many of the dots linking St. Louis with 20th century German history. It features the work of contemporary conceptual artists Renata Stee and Frieder Schnock, who for the past year have been guest lecturing at Washington University and who, in that time, have been fascinated by the connection between our city and their country. Clearly, Germans have played a big role in this region's history for some 200 years now. 20th century Germany, of course, will forever be remembered for the Nazi era and the Holocaust. We'll talk about how 20 years ago these artists produced a celebrated and ongoing Holocaust memorial in Berlin to help ensure that the memory of that era does not die. But first, we'll be talking with them about the museum exhibition that opens on Friday. It features some unusual backstories and is titled Currents 107, Renata Stee and Frieder Schnock, Raft with Stranded Options. Renata and Frieder join me in studio, along with Tricia Paik, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the St. Louis Art Museum. Tricia, I'm going to start with you just to give us some idea before we talk to the artists about how this all came about.
Yes, good morning, Don. Thank you for having us here. Yes, Renata and Frieder were last year's Freund Fellows, which is a very interesting program we do with Washington University, where we invite contemporary artists to come and teach at the MFA program at WashU. And then at the end of the calendar year, they put on a show at the St. Louis Art Museum. And so thankfully, my colleague and I, Patricia Olenek, found them in the application batch. They already had been here showing at Sabina Ekman's exhibition at the Kemper Museum at Washington University. And we chose them out of a big percentage of applicants. And they developed an extraordinary exhibition that shows the connections between Germany and St. Louis.
I'm intrigued by the title, particularly by the 107 and by the words stranded and raft.
Oh, well, they can talk more about that. They subtitled it The German Connection, Raft with Stranded Objects. But just a bit of background. So the Freund exhibition is always folded in with our ongoing contemporary exhibition called Currents, which has been around since the late 1970s. But I want them to talk about the concept.
We'll certainly get to that. But before we start about get into that specific,
sure.
Renata, and I'll go to you on this. I gather that part of your being here and part of your interest that led to this exhibition had to do with your fascination with the linkage of German and St. Louis history.
Oh, yes, that's true. Well, when Frieder and I were invited to come to Washington University for the first time in 2002, we were baffled how German it is, how normal everything sounds and looks. It wasn't New York. It wasn't Chicago. For sure not L.A. It was something like a nice, quiet city with extraordinary town planning, the most beautiful park in the world, I would say, and fantastic buildings. And so on. Actually, friends from Berlin arrived yesterday and they said, oh, we should all have a house here, a holiday house, and come here occasionally because it's so wide. The sky is so large. The arch is so incredible. So it's old and new and forward looking and developing some new structures. Well, that's how it all came about, how it started, actually.
Frieder, in some ways, I found it when I came here from the East Coast that it was more European. It was the pace was a little bit slower. The avenues, the boulevards were broader.
Yeah.
It didn't have that frenetic quality of Eastern U.S.
You're absolutely right, because being in New York, you have a date every half hour. And over here, or L.A., you would drive a half an hour for the next date. But over here, it's really calm, quiet. You have this wonderful blue sky above you, and you go your way and you find your destination.
You must be very excited about the exhibition, which is opening on Friday.
It's a wonderful place. Going to that museum, first of all, you see those wonderful Beckmann pieces collected by Buster, by Morton D. May, and then you go on, and the hanging is perfect, and the team is wonderful. And that's we had the idea in the beginning. Let's interview all the curators, whether there are special German links in the collection.
Renata, if you follow up on that.
Well, it's true. Somehow we looked, you know, we interview people. That's one of our methods. We have, like, when we do shows or public art projects or other things, we go to people and we interview them. And we work, like, in the field called social sculpture, which means that you want people to understand what it is. You don't want to be disconnected from public. You want to be with the audience. And that's something we learned strongly from Josef Beuys. Josef Beuys, a German artist who passed away in 87, but who's also very well represented in this collection. And I should also say about the German and the St. Louis link, I spent my childhood in Stuttgart. And Stuttgart has a beautiful museum, pretty much like this one, just 100 years older. But it's the State Gallery, Staatsgalerie in Stuttgart, has also an incredible collection of Max Beckmann's and a very large collection of Josef Beuys. So, and the building is, it's a classicist building, but a little bit different to this one. But in front of it is a king on a horse. And so when I saw the museum the first time, I thought, wow, this is my place. There is a king on a horse. And also I should say that in the south of Germany, that's actually where Frieda and I went to school and where we were students at the Karlsruhe Art Academy, Art College, is the other St. Louis, France, where they drink champagne and so on. And here you have beer. So that's actually an issue of our video that we created especially for this exhibition.
And that's really what's – oh, excuse me, Don. That's really what's so interesting about what Renata and Frieda do is their commitment to research. And they are continually interviewing people, and they wanted to make sure they met every curator at the St. Louis Art Museum to understand their collections, to see if they wanted to do interventions or insertions in the actual galleries. And instead, through that process, they uncovered three compelling stories about – St. Louis history and the connections to Germany, and that's what their show's all about.
We want to get to those in just a moment. I think, by the way, that St. Louis has a sister city in Germany, and I believe it's Stuttgart.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
There you go.
My memory sometimes fails me, but I think, in fact, that is the case.
We didn't investigate that. I have to say this is something we missed, but we'll do that.
I'm sure someone in our audience will correct me if it needs to be corrected.
we'll start with a piece we did for the Stuttgart Staatsgalerie tomorrow in our lecture at 6 p.m. at Slam Auditorium. And it's a very funny piece, and I guess the audience will like it.
Yeah, it's called Who Needs Art? We Need Potatoes. And it's actually a proverb. And the museum installation, which was up for 11 years, was based on planting and harvesting potatoes every year.
Mm-hmm. Sounds Irish to me. Sounds more Irish, more Irish than German. Tricia, one of the things that I have in my notes here is the fact that apparently our museum has a very highly respected post-war German art inventory.
Yes, exactly. We have an extraordinary collection of post-war German art because of those decisions brought in by Morton de May and those works of art in the early 80s. And so the museum and the directors and curators over time decided to make a commitment to the second half of German artistic production, and was a brilliant curatorial decision over the years. So now we boast a collection of Gerhard Richter's, Anselm Kiefer, Stigmar Polka, a number of other artists. And so one of our inaugural installations right now in our new building is post-war German art in the collection. And so it was very fitting to have Renata and Frieda here because they are making these compelling connections between their art, their research, and our current installation right now at the museum, which closes end of January in 2014.
And Renata, this was a discovery you had not anticipated, I take it, the fact that they were so rich here in the German art.
Well, we knew about the Max Beckmann's here, mm-hmm. and this is I always wanted to come here to see the Beckmann's, but we didn't think that we would get so much art we were familiar with and we grew up with. And like Lupertz was one of our professors, Baselitz, who's also in the collection, was also a professor in Karlsruhe, both really unpleasant people, I should say. And, you know, typical macho man. And that's, of course, over with our generation. So, but still, you know, the art is interesting, and it's interesting how they reflect on German history. All this after-war history, of course, is always linked to to the Holocaust, more or less, or to Germany's position in Europe and the world after the war. And I think that makes it here so interesting. I just wish Berliners would know more about it. You know, I just would like this word to go out. And so I'm happy we have two journalists here who came to write about the show. They came from Berlin. And so this is one of the points of cultural exchange. I think it always goes through media very well.
You'll have to let them know that they can listen online in Germany, and they can do that for the next year because this program is put online on our website, stlpublicradio.org.
Oh,
it'll
wonderful.
Be there for about a year. So let the folks back home know, and they
we
can
surely will.
And they can listen to it.
And whenever we drive through America, we listen to NPR. We think it's so important to have that program, and we would love to have RTÉ, this French and German program, to be broadcast here in America. This would really create a wonderful link between Europe and America, and hopefully there will be a chance.
We're going to have to take a break in a moment or two, but let me go back to the title, Frieder. I don't quite understand what the numeral 107 stands for, and I'm looking for this connection with Raft and Stranded.
Well, 107 is actually the number, the edition of the current exhibition we've had since 1979. So the 107 is just institutional.
And the Raft is linked to a big Reichstag project Renata will talk about.
Well, actually, Raft stands also for a container of memory, which a museum is. And so it's actually the thing that schleps all the goods, you know, to a place.
Carries all the goods, right?
And all the goods are the artworks. And our interest at the beginning was, how does an artwork transform itself or gets transformed by being sent to another place of culture? So from place of origin to another place. And this is really fascinating when you come to America as a European, that you look at objects in another way. You know, Madonna, which we looked at, is another thing when it comes here. So actually, stranded object is the artwork that came here. And stranded object is also the title of a friend of ours who wrote a book about a German film, Eric Sentner, professor at the University of Chicago. So we kind of quote him in this title.
All right. Well, thank you for clarifying that for me. There are three specific things you want to talk about that are included in this exhibition. We'll do that in a moment. But first, we have to take a break. The exhibition, Currents 107, Renata Stee and Frieder Schnuck, Raft with Stranded Options, opens at the museum on Friday the 27th. The artists will have a lecture at the museum tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. Frieder mentioned that a moment ago. We have details on our website at stlpublicradio.org. The artists, Renata and Frieder, are with me in studio, as is Tricia Paik, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the St. Louis Art Museum. If you'd like to get into this conversation, please feel free to do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, we'll take that as well, of course, at STL On Air. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation in connection with an art exhibition that's going to be opening this Friday at the St. Louis Art Museum. My guests in studio are conceptual artists Renata Stee and Frieder Schnuck. Tricia Paik, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the St. Louis Art Museum, is also with us, and I'm happy to announce that, in fact, St. Louis and Stuttgart are sister cities. So there, I was right. I was right for once.
That is wonderful.
Let's get into some of the things that aroused my curiosity in getting ready for this conversation. You've already made reference to, I think maybe you did, Frieder, to the Madonna, or perhaps it was Renata. What are we talking about here? What are folks going to see in connection with this?
We are talking about a wonderful meeting we had with Judy Mann, the curator for Art Till 1800 at the St. Louis Art Museum. So when we mentioned a performance from 1974 by the artist Joseph Beuys, we just mentioned, he had that plan to fly to America, what he did, and go to a gallery and meet the first American. And for him, the first American was a coyote. So he stayed in that gallery, in the Rainier Block Gallery in New York, together with a coyote in a cage for 3 days. And then he left again, wrapped in felt, didn't meet another person back to Düsseldorf. And I told that story to Judy Mann, the curator at SLAM, and she said, oh, that's interesting. We had a man bringing a Madonna in a hearse wrapped up in felt.
To the museum.
To the museum. And he gave it as a loan in the 40s after the Second World War. And then we were really curious, where did this Madonna come from? And Judy provided a clipping from a newspaper, and it told part of the story. And the story is linked to Wiesbaden, because the parents of Mr. Katzenstein had been living in Wiesbaden. They had an art collection. They even had a company with medicine against colds, Resinetten. And he couldn't study medicine in the 30s during Nazi reign. So he went to Switzerland, and then he moved to America, finished his studies, became a doctor, and came to Germany in 45 as an American captain. Straight to Wiesbaden, his hometown, looking for his parents, but his parents had been killed in concentration camps. The collection had been taken away. And so the first question he asked after asking where are my parents was, where is the art collection? And he found out that the Madonna had been sold in the 40s after being taken away from the parents to the Städel Museum in Frankfurt. And he went to the collection point and said, I want to have my belongings back. So he got the Madonna back. It was shipped to back to America, and he lived 50 miles east from here in Salem, Illinois. So that's why it was close to bring the Madonna here in a hearse.
And it's a 15th century German Gothic Madonna.
I was just going to mention
made of wood
that
Yeah. And it's currently on view in our European galleries.
Well, people might have figured out why it would have been brought in a hearse, but why don't you tell them why, Frieder?
To make it a safe transport. So he was really careful about it, because I think it's a legacy, and he really wanted it to be in a safe place, and that's why he brought it here to the museum. Actually, it was acquired in 61 by the museum.
So actually what we did was we documented this whole process of the Madonna and how it was brought and link it in a way to the Josef Beuys whole installation and so on, which is also documented in a piece at the museum. So we link contemporary art or modern art to medieval art and expose it together with the Madonna in the collections.
So we're going to see the Madonna, but how do you link it together? I mean, do you do it with your own artwork? Or
yes,
do,
we made our own artwork. We made two pictures about the whole process of the Madonna and how it came to St. Louis and how it traveled. So it's actually about this cultural transfer from Germany to the U.S.
They took a letter that Dr. Katzenstein had sent to the Nazi Confiscated Art Collection Center in Wiesbaden, and then they drew the passages that the Madonna took from Germany to Salem, Illinois, and then to the St. Louis Art Museum. And that work is now installed next to the 15th century Madonna in our European galleries.
And this is a multimedia exhibition as well. Let's have a little more detail on that.
Oh, yeah. We have a video that kind of represents the difference in a cultural difference called liquid traces, and it's about the different habits. Here you drink beer. In St. Louis, France, you drink champagne, or Cremant, as they call it. So there's a little bit, and both cities are on important rivers, the Mississippi and the Rhine. And so we link these two things together. It's a very kind of minimalistic piece, a lot about nature and so on. And other things are photography. They are the classical thing, like drawing on paper or drawing on canvas. There are, when you walk into the entrance hall, you see a large banner, and it looks like a quilt. That's what we handmade, and it's, how long is it, 9 meters? That's 27 feet long, and it welcomes people by saying, we like America, and America likes us. And it's also a quotation of a Josef Beuys quotation that he made when he came to the U.S. first time.
Now, Frieder, give me some sense of what goes into planning something like this. I mean, obviously, a great deal of thought and a great deal of effort has gone into it. How do you do that working with people like Tricia and the museum to pull it all together?
You talk a lot and you think it over. And
we maybe shout a lot, too.
Yes. For example, we mentioned St. Louis to a dear friend of ours, Michael Cullen, and he's the expert for the Reichstag in Berlin. And he said, oh, you are going to St. Louis. Please check out where is the model of the Reichstag.
That's the Parliament building, right?
The Parliament building.
And that's what we did, because he is the expert and he didn't know what happened to that model, because that model was produced by the German Kaiser to be sent to the World Exhibition in Chicago in 1893. And after the end of that exhibition, it came to the Field Museum, and the Field Museum at a certain point said, actually, we want to change the natural history now. We don't need that architectural model of a German parliament.
It was huge. We should add, it was made of white plaster, and it was huge. It was like 30 feet by 24 feet or something.
Wow.
And the Germans didn't want to take it back because they said it's so expensive to ship it back to Germany. And it was already like, you know, difficult times, and they were Germany was moving more towards a modern kind of architecture, and the Reichstag looks like a big cake.
So in 1897, the German consul in Chicago looked around and he asked the people in St. Louis, and they really said, we would love to have it. So they shipped that model to St. Louis, and it became part of the collection over here. And suddenly, in 1917, when America entered the First World War, it vanished. So that's why we say raft was stranded objects, because we say maybe they shipped it down the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of things German disappeared as a result of the First World War.
For example, the language, because Mark Weil told us his family stopped talking German in 1917. So that was the big break after AD 50, when one-third of the population in St. Louis was German.
And I know there were a number of places changed the pronunciation of the names. There was a Berlin, New Hampshire, I believe it was. It became Berlin, New Hampshire. Ah. They changed the pronunciation of various German names. Mm-hmm. How do you two feel about looking back on those chapters of history? Americans look at them, I suspect, quite differently than you might.
Well, Europeans in general are very history conscious. We have to learn our history, and not only ours, though that of our neighbors as well, Italy, France, Austria, it all interacts. And so now, as Europe is open again, we look at it even more thoroughly, you know, and go back to roots like, you know, we speak Latin, we learn Latin at school. And so there are certain connections. We try to create these TV channels that are bilingual, or we have also TV channels that include Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. And so it's all about culture and language and consciousness in order not to get a war ever again. Mm-hmm. I think this is all this is about, you know, being struggling. I think that also goes into the euro and so on, which I don't want to touch now, I think. But it's much more also a cultural issue. And Germany has been very conscious about its history, the guilt, what we call the question of guilt.
Mm-hmm. And responsibility in the end.
And responsibility. And so that's something what Frieda and I worked with also along, that we, you know, worked with memory, memorialization, public space, and how you bring that to people and translate it.
We're going to be talking a little bit later specifically about your almost exactly 20-year-old Places of Remembrance memorial in Berlin. But, I was in Germany for a number of years, and I was there during the Adolf Eichmann trial. He, of course, was the engineer for Hitler's final solution. And one of the things that was very noticeable was that the young people who were born after the war were saying, enough already. You know, we weren't here. Don't burden us with this guilt, because we weren't even alive when all of this was happening. I'm not sure. I doubt if either one of you were alive at that time.
Well, I think the memory came back in, or the memory issues came back in the late 70s and then in the 80s. It's a generational question. You know, first with student riots in the 60s, it was, you know, raised, and they tried to get rid of old judges, old Nazi, mm-hmm. you know, in official positions. And then it slowed down for a moment. It's like a wave. It comes and goes. So I think my students, I mean, I'm a professor for art and technology and film and media at the University of Applied Sciences in Berlin. And our students are very politically very conscious and historically as well. I can say that when we have foreign students coming and looking with astonishment that somebody would question these things, it's very, students are very, they want to know about it and they want to keep up the memory. And it's now the third generation after the war. So there is this other thing going back to the U.S., the fascination for Native Americans. That's also something we have in our show. Carl May, the famous writer who wrote about these two major figures, Winnetou, the good Native American Apache, and Old Shatterhand, the white man who came and conquered and destroyed and so on. This is also something, you know, in the reverse side that's very important in Germany and is, I would say, equally cherished as Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer and so on.
That's interesting. You mentioned Carl May. I'd forgotten until you mentioned that name. He wrote about the American West, as you just indicated. I don't think he ever visited the American West.
Never. He was never here, but he had huge knowledge about the country. It's hard to say how. He even had a Native American costume, I think an Apache, with Apache patterns made for him. And he was very, you know, aware of this whole culture. And many films were made about it in the East and in the West. So during East-West, the split of Germany, both sides tried to capture this topic for themselves and made films about it. And so that's also something we bring into the show. All this other, you know, the other side of fascination, how Germans look at Americans.
And that's, again, the connection that Renata and Frieder made with our own collection at the Art Museum, because we have great strengths in Native American art. So they've actually done an installation inserted actually in our post-war German installation that connects this kind of German fascination with Native American culture here in the States.
Yes, exactly.
And so everyone will have to come and see that part of that intervention.
We all have histories we'd like to, a part of which we'd like to forget. There's no question about that. Let's take a couple of phone calls as time allows, and we'll begin with Rich calling from the Bevo neighborhood of St. Louis. Go ahead, Rich.
Morning, Don.
Hi.
The conversation a few minutes ago had turned towards how things had changed about German culture in St. Louis and at the outbreak of World War One, and I believe that, as far as I can ascertain, my family's name had changed its pronunciation. It has an I and an E in it, and in German, the E, I is pronounced E, and the E would be silent, so it would be a long E sounding, but in the wake of entering the war, we changed the pronunciation to the long I at the beginning of it. And also, you know, I live in a neighborhood that has a street named after a famous romantic German philosopher, and nobody ever calls the street Goethe. They call it Goethe.
And I think Spady Road also falls into that category. Yeah, Tom, thank you very much. Rich, thank you very much. There are a lot of examples like that. Sure. We appreciate your call. Let's take this one from Tom calling from South County. Go ahead, Tom.
Thanks, Don. I wonder if your guests are aware of the Missouri Putschen right before the Civil War, when the St. Louis Germans marched on Jefferson City and overthrew the governor so that Missouri wouldn't join the Confederacy. The St. Louis Germans were largely 48ers, people from the cities, political refugees who fled after the failed revolutions in 1848 and saved Missouri from being part of the Confederacy during the Civil War. It's been so meaningful to me because, as a kid, I didn't realize that there was a difference between Germans and Nazis. I thought they were synonymous. And having a German last name, you know, I thought that maybe there was something uniquely German about fascism and anti-Semitism. And when I learned that my forebears fought the Civil War, you know, not to suppress the South or for economic dominance of the South, but against slavery, it really made me very proud of my German heritage. So I wonder if they know about that and did anything with that. There probably aren't any artworks that have anything to do with that.
All right, Tom, let's ask. Frieder, go ahead.
Yes, you can be absolutely proud because Karl Schurz came to the city here and founded a newspaper, and Joe Pulitzer started to learn about newspaper making here in the city. So I think that's a wonderful legacy, and there is for sure a different Germany, not only the Nazis.
We had a tremendous German population here in the middle of the 19th century, and it was a very liberal group, too, and very significant during the course of the Civil War. As time allows, I want to be sure to get this this next story in, because another thing that you're concentrating on in this exhibit concerns a gentleman by the name of Werner Stiller. Renata, tell us that story.
Yes, that's true. Werner Stiller is actually quite a well-known figure in Germany. The Spiegel magazine launched a story about him. And what's funny, well, he was an East German spy during the Cold War. And then somehow, you know...
He was a Nazi officer.
Well, he was a Nazi officer.
Stasi, sorry.
Stasi officer, yeah.
That's the East German secret police.
Yeah. The East German secret police. And then he ran away, or I would say he moved to work for the CIA. And then in order to bring him to a safe place, the CIA brought him to St. Louis. He was able to choose the place, and he didn't know St. Louis. He put his finger on the map, and he said, that's where I want to go.
No, he saw the name Mississippi, and that's when he said, oh, I know about it, Mark Twain, for sure.
Yes,
and then
course.
He said, let's go there.
Yeah, but he didn't know about St. Louis anything. So he went to study economy at Washington University. And later, when you know, the Cold War was over and Germany was reunited, he became he went to Wall Street and worked there and became a trader and a broker. And actually, he lost his money. And now he's living in Budapest in a social housing. So it's quite a story. But the other side of the word Stiller is a book by the Swiss writer Max Frisch. And that's one of my dearest books. We had to read it at school, and it's about a figure of person who denies his identity and says, I'm not Stiller. I'm not a sculptor. I'm Jack White. I'm and so and so. And that's the same, actually, process with Stiller, who later became Fischer. Yes. Peter, what was his name?
Peter Fischer.
So we somehow show this kind of switch of identities, you know, the way that it can happen with the political systems, and now nobody cares about it if he was a spy, wasn't.
And how is it presented in the exhibition?
Photography. It's a series of photographies. Mm. Yeah.
Ich bin nicht Stiller.
Ich bin nicht Stiller.
I am not Stiller.
Eight different photographs that have a different saying on each one, saying I am not Stiller. I am Peter White. I am a traitor, which is a play on being a traitor on Wall Street, but then a traitor to East Germany, and it's extraordinary work.
We're going to take our next break in just a moment, but Tricia, let me ask you about the exhibition. How long is it going to run, and any special hours or special considerations?
It is opening this Friday, and it closes January 5th, 2014. But we do invite everyone to come tomorrow for a public lecture at 6 p.m. in our auditorium. It's our first lecture back in our auditorium after we've been closed for a while. And we have special hours, actually, in the main building, Cass Gilbert. People will be able to see their exhibition through 9 o'clock tomorrow. So we invite
and
everyone.
And on Thursday, you're doing a special tour at 11 o'clock.
Frieder's being my publicist. I'm giving a separate...
You might join
I'm giving a separate gallery talk on our outdoor sculpture collection at 11 a.m. on Thursday.
Okay, great. Well, you've been listening most recently to Tricia Paik, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Art Museum, talking about the exhibition that begins this Friday and some other things going on. We're going to continue our conversation, but take it in a different direction with our guests, Frieder and Renata. This deals with something that has nothing to do with what's happening at the museum over the next couple of months, but something that 20 years ago you started in Berlin that was quite controversial. People are still talking about it. It's a memorial to the Holocaust victims that still exists. We'll come back and continue with that part of the conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. Before we continue our conversation with conceptual artists Renata Stieth and Frieder Schnock, I have some headlines here for you. This is what St. Louis Public Radio's newsroom is following today. A group of state representatives is kicking off a statewide listening tour to get feedback from Missourians about issues facing schools. The first stop this afternoon is in St. Charles. First-term Republican U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Illinois' 13th Congressional District is announcing his reelection bid. He stops today in Edwardsville. The St. Louis Cardinals ground crew is busy getting the field in shape for tonight's game against the Washington Nationals. The field was transformed over the weekend for the first ever football game held there. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Welcome back now. As I say, we continue our conversation with Renata and Frieder. Earlier this program, we looked ahead to their exhibition at the St. Louis Art Museum. Now we look back at a public memorial they created just 20 years ago, almost exactly 20 years ago. It's titled Places of Remembrance and features 80 permanent plaques they created and placed throughout the former Jewish district of Berlin, permanent reminders of what Hitler's dehumanizing laws and restrictions that extended to when they could and could not shop, what pets they could own, and what jewelry was subject to confiscation, and much, much more, of course. Joining us by phone for this segment is Dan Rich, Education Director for the Holocaust Museum and Learning Center in St. Louis. Dan, are you there?
I am. Thank you for including me in the conversation.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. Say hi to Renata and to Frieder.
Hello. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
I met them in, I think, over 10 years ago. They gave me their card. People that know me know I'm something of a hoarder. I came across the card a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I think I'll keep this. So now you're here. So welcome.
Thank you so much.
Dan, this is a great surprise. Are you familiar with their memorial in Berlin?
I am familiar with it. I have not seen it. I did see a film about it, I believe, at the Jewish Museum in New York. Mm-hmm. Although, again, one of those coincidences, one of our docents is currently visiting Berlin. She's visiting the neighborhood where her mother grew up, living with her grandparents. The mother did survive. And she came across these images. And she emailed me over the weekend and said, this is the most powerful thing. I've not heard about this. And then she emailed me again and said, wait, I think these artists are coming to St. Louis. So very few degrees of separation.
And in fact, they did, and here they are. Let's talk. Renata, again, I'll start with you about this memorial. Just give us some sense of how it's structured.
Well, it is a decentralized memorial, there are 80 signs installed on lampposts all over a particular area, which used to be called Jewish Switzerland. And it's an area where Albert Einstein lived, and Hannah Arendt, and Gisel Freund, the photographer. And you can tell, really intellectual, like middle-class Jewish families lived there. And it also became an unfortunate area because Jewish citizens from all over the city were brought to that area. They were like stuffed in apartments, so-called Judenhäuser, Jews apartments or Jews houses, and were deported from there to concentration camps. And when we thought about, this is a public memorial, financed with public money from the Senate of Berlin. And when the competition started in 1991, I encouraged Frieder to work with me on that public art project. Actually, that was the first time we worked together because normally we debate too much and so on. We have our own work, but we also work together on things. And so in that case, we said, okay, let's create something new. And we passionately investigated. We went to research centers. We looked what had happened. And we said, we want to do something that will be for future generations, and it will be unavoidable, which means if you walk the street, you read it. You want it or not. And if you look out of a house, you will see the sign that will touch one part of your daily life issue, which is like Jews are not allowed to play musical instruments, Jews are not allowed to go to libraries, go to school, you know, do anything that makes our life world worth living. And so, yes, till today, it worked very well.
What was the reaction, Frieder, when this memorial was unveiled?
We were starting with two workers to put the signs up. There was an official date and announcement, even two exhibitions before. And suddenly, when we put up a cat on a street on a lamppost, someone opened the window and yelled out, "Go away, Jewish pigs! Haut ab, Judenschweine!" And so it was clear we addressed him directly. He got the message. And then our workers were astonished because they thought there is no need for such a memorial. And I think it's quite successful.
Why was there a competition for such a memorial or a memorial of some sort in Berlin at this time?
Well, that's how you do it in Germany. Everything is financed with public money. And once you get the permission from the Senate of Berlin, at that time it was 350,000 marks. An equivalent to it in Euro today. And then they create, you know, normal jury who decide on artists. This was a so-called two-step open competition. So 96 artists participated. They picked eight out of the first part of the competition, and then out of these eight, they picked ours.
But the motivation behind this competition was to keep the memory of that era alive. Nie wieder, I believe, is what folks say.
Yes.
Never again.
Yes, definitely. And we have many archives in Berlin that are dedicated to the memory of the Holocaust, the research of the Holocaust, universities, the Free University, at its own research center and so on. And so there are several Holocaust memorials. Now they have a big Holocaust memorial in the center of town, which is abstract and which doesn't really say much about the whole issue and about the crime. So that's...
And you have to be very specific to keep memory alive. And that's why the text on those 80 signs are in present tense. So the text for the cat says, "Jews are not allowed to have household pets," and the date underneath, 1942. But people don't read to the end. So they say, "Jews cannot have pets." Mm.
Yeah, so when the first signs came up, people called the police. They thought it was anti-Semitic activity. And they took the signs down and stored them with guns and drugs in a police cellar until, you know, the senator decided we can reinstall it.
Dan Rich, let me get some sense of how you're reacting to all of this.
Well, certainly there are significant differences to how the Holocaust is going to be commemorated and remembered in the actual places where it happened. So, which is why the commemoration that your guests is so powerful. It's on those streets where Jews lived. It's in that neighborhood from where Jews were transported to camps. Very different here in the United States, where the Holocaust is something that happened a long time ago, but also in a whole other place. And it's a different challenge to make it relevant to especially the young people who visit our museum today. One way that we do that, and we continue to talk about the events of the Holocaust, is an edition of an interactive exhibit called Change Begins With Me. And that deals with issues going on in the world today that are also rooted in bias, prejudice, ethnic conflict, but in the world now. So they'll see the permanent exhibit and see the Holocaust history. As a matter of fact, there are 150 Parkway School students here now, but they'll also see that the issues of prejudice and bigotry and violence stemming from those stereotyping continues to this day, and it makes it more relevant to them.
Do you have any sense that the memory of that era is dimming for a great many people, actually?
Certainly, whenever students visit our museum, they do have an opportunity to visit, as I said, the permanent exhibit, but they also hear from a Holocaust survivor. So it goes from the general to a very specific experience. And we're still able to provide survivors for every group who comes. So they will really hear one individual's experience.
Of course, that will change. Pardon the interruption. That will change because there won't be that many survivors left in a very short period of time, or any survivors left.
You know, there will come that time. We do have recordings of all of our survivors. You can't ask a question of a recording or embrace a recording. But for now, we are still able to do it. So we're fortunate in that way.
Renata, you mentioned earlier that you do a lot of recording, and I know you did a lot of recording, you and Frieder, for this particular exhibit. What were you hearing 20 years ago when you were making these recordings, which were instrumental in your decision to what to put on these plaques?
Well, I should say that we made secret recordings in the streets because we didn't want to transform, actually, the information, you know,
hidden
by
mic.
Our imagination. So we had mics, hidden mics, and we would ask people, do you know what happened in this area? And they said, they lived here. And we said, who they? And we found out that people can't say the word Jew, Jude. They were so hesitant. So that's why we used it as part of our, when we wrote the anti-Jewish laws and regulations for the signs, we always put the, because we shortened them, we transformed them and so on, then we put the word Jew on top of it. And that was one thing. The other thing was that people had, you know, different kind of reactions. So a woman burst out in tears and said, yes, I saw it happen. Another one said, oh, I don't know. I haven't been here. You know, I just moved here.
They
and so
are
on.
All in Israel.
Yeah.
Things like that.
What was the reaction between different age groups, those who were there and those who saw it and those who didn't?
It wasn't really a question of age group. It was just a question of interest, you know. So you get different reactions. It's not a generational thing because the Holocaust is so much questions on German television and every day, actually, and also on the radio and documentaries and so on. So it is present in our daily lives.
How are people reacting to it today?
You mean to the Bavarian Quarter, the memorial?
Yeah, the memorial.
Oh, it's still cherished, and a lot of school classes go there. In fact, every morning a group comes, groups and buses come. Whenever I take someone there, I'm pretty astonished that there are so many people walking around or driving around and looking at the signs. I think it's also connected to the fact that it's close by the former town hall and the Senate of West Berlin. And that's actually on John F. Kennedy Square, where John F. Kennedy said, Ich bin ein Berliner, in 63. And so it has this huge history. It's actually quite a boring urban structure, but it has this incredible history that is linked to wartime and after wartime, Cold War. And so nowadays, it's like, you know, living memory, visualized memory, I would say.
Dan Rich, it sounds to me like people are traveling to that particular district today, much as they are traveling to your museum today.
Well, it's interesting. Again, first of all, the museum is a department of the Jewish Federation. So one challenge is making it clear to our visitors that the lessons of the Holocaust are much broader than just the Jewish situation, which is the Change Begins With Me exhibit plays a large role in that. But you had brought up the aging survivor population. The docent who's actually traveling and was so moved by what she saw in that neighborhood is beginning to tell her mother's story and her grandparents' story. She won't claim to, you know, she won't personify her mother, but she has photographs, and she's going to start telling the family story, the grandparents, her mother's story. Her mother did survive Auschwitz. Her grandparents both perished. Her aunt, who she's named for, was murdered. But she's now going to become one of our speakers. So she's bringing that information back.
Frieder, it must be very gratifying for you and Renata. We only have a minute left. I should caution, we can't have a long answer here, but it must be very gratifying to hear how that is being received here 20 years later.
Yes, I like to hear it. And this memorial is not in the main focus. Normally people go to the Eisenman Memorial, huge concrete blocks. And so that's why we're really happy to hear that people discover it in Schöneberg, in Berlin-Schöneberg.
Right. And Renata, your gratification, I'm sure, is
yes,
part of it for you as well.
It's wonderful. It's alive, and it keeps memory alive, and that's how it should be.
How important is keeping that memory alive, Dan?
It certainly is our mission, both in terms of passing along that history and that specific history, but also the broader relevant lessons that are as important today as they ever were.
Well, Dan, I want to thank
people will come out and see us.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Dan, thanks so much for being with us and continued good work at the museum. Thank you so much for being with us. That's Dan Risch from the Holocaust Museum and Learning Center here in St. Louis. My guests in studio today have been conceptual artists Renata Stee and Frieda Schnuck. Tricia Paik, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the St. Louis Art Museum, has also been with us. That exhibit, by the way, that we've been talking about gets underway Friday the 27th, and there will be a lecture at the museum tomorrow evening at 6, featuring Renata and Frieda. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you have a wonderful exhibition. I'm sure you will.
Thank you for having us. This was wonderful.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about climate change and ways to address the man-made contributions to it. Looking ahead to Thursday, we'll convene our monthly legal roundtable in the courtroom of this new St. Louis University Law School downtown. If you'd like to be part of the audience, plan on arriving at 11:30 or so for the broadcast. Archive versions of St. Louis on the Air available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.